And I think there's some strong cultural questions as a society we just need to ask ourselves. And this is just, forget who's president right now, but we need to ask ourselves about like how we've gotten to this point, who we are as a people, and how do we move past some of those questions.
Hello, this is the Great Battlefield Podcast. I'm Nathaniel G. Perlman. A great political battle is being fought right now between progressives and the forces of reaction on the other side. This show is about the political entrepreneurs and other progressive leaders who are finding new or improved ways to fight. Marlon Marshall is a partner at 270 Strategies, a political consulting firm formed by 8 veterans of the Obama presidential campaign. Marlon is a well-liked field organizer who has a great career in Democratic politics. He took time away from 270 to be director of state campaigns and political engagement for the Hillary 2016 campaign, and previously worked on public engagement for the Obama White House. Marlon is a veteran of both Obama presidential campaigns. In 2012, he was the deputy national field director. When you talk to Marlon, you learn that he's a St. Louis guy who got into politics at the University of Kansas. I really enjoyed talking with Marlon about his career and family, about political entrepreneurship, and what he sees in politics these days. So after a quick word with our sponsor, my interview with Marlon Marshall at 270 Strategies.
This episode is brought to you by Graphicacy. Graphicacy is an analytic design firm that can help you advance the mission of your organization using your own real data and information. They are 21st century visual communicators who create interactive graphics, motion graphics, and data visualizations. You can find Graphicacy at graphicacy.com. That is GRAPHICACY.com. With Graphicacy's help, you can visualize a better world.
Hi, Marlon.
Hey, how are you?
I'm pretty good.
Good.
Would you mind introducing yourself and giving me a quick biography?
Sure. Yeah. Marlon Marshall, born and raised in St. Louis, Missouri. A few of us, actually, like myself, Jeremy Bird, there's a few of us from St. Louis, which went to grade school, high school there. My mom she's retired, 36-year teacher in the St. Louis public school system.
What did she teach?
Fourth and fifth grade. So education is very important to me, which I'll talk about in a little bit too. My dad was a custodian at my high school. So one of the reasons I actually got involved in politics was I got to see early on the kind of discrepancy in the education system in St. Louis. So my mom, we lived in the county. St. Louis has a city and county, kind of like the suburbs or whatever. And I saw my mom taught in the city, so mostly African-American kids, very little resources at the school she taught. But I was able to go to school in the county in a relatively wealthy school district because my dad worked in the school district, so I could go to school there. And so, you know, we had computers and all this stuff. And then at my mom's school, she personally bought a lot of stuff to like really help educate her kids, but she didn't get that much support financially from the district. And I just always thought that was wrong. Like as a kid, I was like, why is this happening? So after high school, I went to the University of Kansas, a Jayhawk, Rock Chalk Jayhawk. Went there originally as a computer engineering major, was loving it. Somebody asked me to run for student government for like the engineering school. I was like, okay, for the entire campus, but like I would be representing the school engineering. I ran and loved it, like loved the campaign part of it, loved actually becoming a senator and working on behalf of students.
Are you pretty extroverted?
Yeah. Yeah. Not as much anymore.
You got energy out of campaigning.
I get energy out of people. And I don't think I realized that until college. So that definitely gave me energy. So I like loved every minute of it.
So that's Big 8 back then, right?
It was like just starting into the Big 12.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah. But it was like old Big 12 when it was like Colorado was still there and Nebraska, they're now gone. I stayed in student center for a couple years,
What did you end up majoring in?
Communication studies. Uh-huh. So I'll never forget, I like called my mom my junior year and I was like, I think I'm going to switch majors. And she was like, what are you doing? She's totally fine with it now.
Well, you've done all right with it.
Right. When she got to meet President Obama after I left the White House. And I think that all made up for for everything. Yeah, and so I switched majors to communication studies, was student body vice president, worked to with the administration to recruit more students of color to University of Kansas and make it a more diverse place. So I like learned both how to organize on campus. I learned how to work with administrators. I learned how to campaign. Like I just learned all this stuff on campus. And when I was finishing up, I was like, I kind of want to do this full time. Like I don't know how to get involved. And so a couple of years afterwards, I just met friends who were involved in campaigns and went to a training in Detroit in 2004 for a Democratic Gain. They were holding a training for organizers. And I went and I was learning about organizing and happened to meet the John Kerry folks who were working in Kansas City at the time. And I was living in Kansas City. And a week later, they called me and said, do you want to come be an organizer? And I said, yes. And that was the beginning of a journey I wasn't expecting.
What did you actually do on that campaign? What did you learn?
Yeah, so I was a field organizer in Kansas City, Missouri. And so I had just a handful of precincts in the area and learned, had to recruit volunteers. I'll never forget when we first started, it was just two of us who were organizers and a regional field director. Joe Maloney was the regional field director, Marco Guido was the organizer, and then myself. We were working out of the International Association of Firefighters Union Hall, and they had 8 phone lines. And our first responsibility was just like, we got to fill the phone lines so we can reach out to voters and talk about the election. So I, you know, just on the phone all day, we're calling volunteers and trying to get them to come in into the office. And I like loved it and hated it at the same time because I was like, how does this work? Because like the volunteers weren't fully in yet. But, you know, as like a week or two passed, volunteers start coming in. You start building relationships with these volunteers. You learn how passionate people were to make change in their own community. And then you realize as yourself as an organizer, your job is really to help these folks make change in their own communities. And you are there to give them the tools that they can use to go out and make their own change. And so we went from 8 phone lines. We moved to a bigger office. We had 40 phone lines. All of a sudden, it was full, and people were taking walk lists and going back to their own communities and canvassing and knocking on doors. And it was amazing. I learned a lot from it. That October, they realized they weren't going to win the state of Missouri, and so they moved us all to different states. And so I went to Ohio for the last month of the Kerry campaign.
The crucial state.
The crucial state. I was in Cleveland.
Heartbreaking state.
It was very much a heartbreak at the time. I'll never forget, actually, on election day, so I did like GOTV work in Cleveland and just seeing like lines of people at the polling locations and just thinking like,
it's very moving to see that, isn't it?
Right. Yeah. It was super moving. And I just thought we were going to win because I was like, look at all these people who want change. You know, they don't like the direction Bush was taking our country. And I remember literally staying up all night waiting to see, right. I just, you know, I was young and didn't think that it was going to be close. I was like, no, our polling locations are packed. Like, you know, we're going to win. Yeah. And just remember seeing all these people and remember staying up all night. And then finally, after like falling asleep at 4 a.m., waking up at like 8 a.m. and Kerry was conceding at the time. So learn a lot about how to bounce back after a loss, learn a lot about organizing, learn a lot about what your job is as an organizer and how do you work with communities to provide them the support they need to change their community, and loved it. And at the time, met my wife. I didn't know that at the time, but she was an organizer also, and we stayed in contact with each other. And 10 years later, we figured it out. Yeah.
Well, that's probably the most important
thing. Yeah, exactly. That's true.
So after that election, what was the next move for you?
After that, I worked for the Kansas Democratic Party. So I was living in the Kansas City, Kansas area, which Kansas City, Kansas, Kansas City, Missouri is like one big metropolitan area. Then I became a regional field director in like the Johnson County and Wyandotte County area of Kansas City, Kansas for 2005. So Secretary Sebelius was then governor of Kansas at the time, and she was getting ready to run for re-election. And so I was the party put organizers on the ground early, thanks to Howard Dean's 50-state strategy. And so I was one of those regional field directors in the area working with volunteers to help build out an organizing strategy for that race. I was there about maybe a year. I actually didn't stay throughout the entire election because I came to D.C., went to a training at the DNC, which is where I actually met Robbie Mook. He had worked with my now wife at the time, Stacy, She was like, you guys should meet. They were working together on a delegates race in Virginia. We met.
He was a guest on the show earlier, yeah. but what's your impression about him? Obviously ends up running a national campaign yeah. and many other successful statewide campaigns. Yeah. What was your impression about him?
Robbie's a close friend. He was the officiant at Stacey and I's wedding.
So, yeah.
So my impression of him at the time was like, wow, here's this guy who he was energetic. He was a trainer at a training I went to. He was just moving to the audience. And, you know, we're the same age. So he was like young at the time. When he was training the room, there's just like this energy field in the room that is just moving. And you're like, I want to be an organizer like that guy. Like he got it. And he was humble, still is humble, and realized, you know, one of the things he's always said to me that has always stuck with me is that wherever you go, you always want to leave a community better off than when you originally got there. Yes, you obviously hope to win, but you are working with volunteers to give them tools they need to like organize in their communities way past when you may leave. First impression was amazing. I also realized that he was cheap, the first impression, because he taught at that training. He agreed to train at that training in order to get some paper because he didn't want to spend his campaign funds in the delegate race to buy paper. And they needed to print walk lists. And so the DNC was like, yeah, we'll give you some boxes of paper if you will do this training. And I was like,
he got paid in paper.
Exactly. Yeah. I was like, oh, you're pretty cheap. To this day, same guy. He's obviously done amazing things. Still humble, still a great leader, still focuses on what's right.
But somehow your story is I left the Democratic Party.
In Kansas,
yeah. Because of something that happened in this training, or what was the route that?
Yeah, yeah. So we just hit it off, mm-hmm. and he got a job running the coordinated campaign in Maryland in 2006, and called me. It was like, I think you should come out here. As much as I love being in Kansas, I knew I wanted to eventually branch out of there. Right, I lived in Missouri and Kansas my whole life. I wanted to get different experiences, so I left and went to originally be a regional field director in Prince George's County. Ended up being one of the field directors on the campaign. This was when Martin O'Malley was running for governor and Ben Cardin was running for Senate, and worked with him when he was coordinating a campaign in Maryland and loved it. Yeah.
What was your view on O'Malley?
I thought O'Malley was great. I thought he was super inspiring back then. I have spent some time with him post then in different settings. Always super nice. I think policy-wise, you know, I think he always strikes the right tone. So
I interviewed him once and found him very impressive.
Exactly. Yeah. I was always a fan of him for sure.
So you go through that campaign in
yep.
Maryland.
Yep.
And what was next?
So then it was time for the 2008 campaign. Mm-hmm. And so
I remember that one.
Yep. Robbie was hired to be a state director. I went to be the field director. This was in Nevada. And so then we went to several states together.
And this is Hillary.
This is Hillary. Yeah. Sorry, I thought I said that part. And then went to several states, Nevada, Ohio, Indiana, mm-hmm. Puerto Rico, ran field programs, taking what I had learned both from my experience in Missouri and Kansas, plus what I had learned from Robbie in Maryland, trying to run field programs. Loved it.
What did you love about it?
People, you know, kind of going back to what gives me the energy. I realize I love managing people because I feel like there's a difference in my mind between being a leader and being a manager. I like to say I try to be both. A leader, I believe, is one who inspires, who can set a vision, and who can inspire people to work towards that vision. A manager is somebody who is literally day-to-day helping a team and individuals get better at what they're doing. And I love trying to do both those things. The thing I love most about management is that you work to build a team culture, but you also have to understand that everyone on the team is different. And so what Bud and I may push for Mike and what make Mike's tick may be different than what makes Laura tick. And so you have to understand that, but then you still have to build a common culture for Mike and Laura to be successful. And so trying to figure out those kind of nuances, I loved. And I feel like I learned how to do throughout that campaign cycle. So once Hillary ended up conceding, I went back to home state of Missouri, got to live with my parents, and was the general election director, basically helped run the coordinator for the campaign for change for President Obama in Missouri. Then I got to work with Field and GOTV and voter protection and our operations team. And
how did you feel about that Hillary versus Obama race. Where were you personally, and how? What were you thinking?
I was a Hillary fan from before she even decided to run. At the time, I thought we needed someone to come in from day one who could quickly make change, given where I felt like the trajectory of the country was going. And I felt like that person was Hillary Clinton. I actually remember I was in the campaign office watching the 2004 DNC speech from President Obama and was immediately like, wow, right? And I remember talking to one of my volunteers. She was like, this guy should run for president someday. And then he did. And so I was always like, amazing, like inspiring, amazing leader. During that campaign, like I was had utmost respect for him, even though I worked for Hillary. And so for me, when she conceded, it was my biggest thing is like, one, I think she, like, I'm not going to jump to his team until we get through running our race. And so whenever she decides it's time to concede or not, then I'll figure out my piece from there. So once she did, I was like, all right, I would love to. To me, it's not about the candidate. You work for a candidate because they're an amazing leader, but it's bigger than that. It's about the people. And
well, and there's a big difference between losing a primary to someone who you also like generally.
Right.
Than losing a general election to someone who maybe is very, very different.
Exactly. Yeah. And so it was never, I know obviously the primary got a little contentious at times, but
pretty gentle in, as things go.
Exactly. But, yeah. And for me, it was very easy to work for his team once she ended up stepping aside.
So after he wins, what did you do?
He won. It was amazing. So yeah. I came to DC and I worked on his transition team.
How did you land that? How did that happen?
So once the general election got started and I was in a senior leadership position in the state of Missouri, and I knew a lot of the people who worked on his team just because it's a very small business, as you know. But I remember we had this training in Chicago and I just meet all these different state leadership folks and, folks in Chicago headquarters like Jen O'Malley and so many other great folks, and just stayed in touch with those folks. Once he won, I was able just to use those networks to say, I want to keep going. I want to be helpful as much as possible. I didn't, I wasn't like, I want a disadministration job or I want to go down. Just like, I want to be helpful and let me know what's best. And so,
how old are you at that point, would you say?
This was 2008. I was 29.
Yeah. So that's quite young to be in a transition team for a new president.
Yeah,
right.
That's what
a great thing about politics.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah. You can kind of make an impact at a young age. And so I worked on his transition team doing like agency review and helping figure out how some agencies were doing things in the prior administration and helping the new incoming secretary set up for when they were to be confirmed. And it was awesome just to kind of also learn about the government because I had just done the campaign side to that point. So I never done government. So it was really cool to kind of see some of the behind the scenes of government. Yeah.
And what did that lead to?
So I was originally going to be one of the White House liaisons at the State Department, which was a cool opportunity because it'd be worth working with like the White House Presidential Personnel Office, and I had networks over there through Obama World, but then obviously working at the State Department with Hillary, who I had great networks with too. So I spent about 2 months kind of helping out in that temporary role, but an opportunity came up at the DCCC to be their national field director. And, I still had the itch on the campaign side and wanted to continue that work. And
a little bit of a tough timing, though. I
didn't know that then. So I ended up going to the D-Trip probably, I think it was like March or April of 2009.
And were you there for the whole cycle?
There for the entire cycle.
The shellacking cycle.
I was there for all the seats that the party lost.
What happened?
Well, I think, a confluence of things. I think obviously the backlash from healthcare and the convergence of the Tea Party at that point in time. The President's Party always loses seats in the midterm.
I think it was a lot of hangover from the recession too.
I think it was hangover from the recession. And I think, in my personal opinion, I think we started to see the way the Tea Party kind of converged and some of those things that came out of that and the role that like race plays still in our world. And if you look back at now, I think you kind of see some of those pieces and and what it did. But we knew that like it was going to be hard to hold some seats. I don't think we were expecting 63, but I learned a lot in that cycle, a lot, for a lot of different ways.
DCCC, the controversy right now is about whether they should be protecting all incumbents and throwing their weight around to do that versus giving a little more leeway to challengers. And where do you stand on where the DTRIP should be on matters like that?
I don't have a strong opinion either way. I think what I will say, generally speaking, from a principle standpoint, I think anyone should be able to run for office at any time. So if you want to, if you think you can do better than somebody who's currently in office, run. And like the voters should decide, right? I just think that's a natural principle. I also understand that the DTRIP say, I don't think a lot of people know this, but they actually are a membership organization. And a lot of current members of Congress pay dues to the DTRIP, which is how they're able to function. And obviously then they raise money, you know, from donors and from grassroots donors alike. But they are a membership organization. And I also understand that members want to figure out how to help each other out as well too. But from a broader principle, I think if you like, if you want to run against someone in your own party, to me, it's not about party. It's about who can do the best job serving the people. If you want to do that, you should be able to do that.
After that cycle at the DTRIP, what was the next move for
so
Mr. Marshall?
That cycle, I actually thought I was going to stay at the DTRIP for the 2012 cycle. Mm-hmm. That was kind of original like thought and plan. Mm-hmm. I have been talking a little bit to Jeremy Bird, mm-hmm. who I'm now partners with here at 270. He was going to be the national field director for the president's reelection campaign. And I just had this like sense in my gut. I was like, this is a historic moment in time. It's the first, you know, black president. I've got a chance to work on his 08 race. Like I could get a chance to work in headquarters and work to create an amazing field program with Jeremy. How can I not do that? So
there's something even with the kind of pain of a campaign, because it's an awful lot of work,
right?
That it's hard to not, if asked, tackle it.
Exactly.
There?
Right. Yes. And
especially when you're friends in high places,
especially when it's like Jeremy, I mentioned this at the beginning, he's from St. Louis. So we just have a lot of things in common and had known each other for a while and had worked with each other, but like through different organizations and never like been on the same team. And I worked with Robbie for a few years. And I thought it was an opportunity to, you know, work with some different folks and learn some different things. And
so what was your role on 2012?
I was the deputy national field director.
Yeah.
So Bird and Mitch Stewart, also a partner here at 270, kind of ran the day-to-day, like overall state strategy. And I basically ran the day-to-day of the national field program. So worked a lot with our states on what they were doing to recruit, retain, and build out the neighborhood team model.
Another historic race.
That was amazing.
And even though, you know, we now think of it as, oh yeah, of course he was reelected. It's never of course.
Yeah, I've heard people say like, oh yeah, you know you guys are going to win, right? And like, there was no one in that building who slacked or just assumed that we were going to win. Like, I'll never forget, we were watching results on election night and we were like, oh my God, this, you know, and like when the states started coming out, we were like, oh my God, this is amazing, right? But like, it was not, we didn't go into it like saying like, oh, we're going to get 300 some electoral votes. It was like, we have to fight for every inch and we did.
Over this time, had you much chance to get to know the president?
No, that I got a chance to interact with him more post 2012, but not much before that.
Is there something that stands out for you in 2012, like a moment or a story that characterizes it for you?
Man, so many. Definitely election night and just like being with the like team. But honestly, the things that stand out to me the most were
cutting down the nets. It's sort of
yeah. I mean, that was awesome. Yeah. But the things that stand out to me the most, we had several like all staff trainings. Mm-hmm. Where we brought folks to like the senior leadership to Chicago and would kind of drill in on that. And like the camaraderie of the team, everyone literally had each other's back. Those are things that stand out to me the most. Like people really enjoyed working together. They enjoyed learning from each other. And so like those moments where it was like all staff getting together and supporting each other were really stand out to me.
So do you then launch 270 fairly soon after the campaign?
Yep. So
what's the founding story there?
Yeah. Jeremy and Mitch had some conversations about like shortly after the election about, you know, how do we take a lot of the things that we learned, not just in the Obama campaign and then the neighborhood team model, but, you know, learned throughout our time doing organizing, doing grassroots organizing, and how do we take that and help other campaigns, other causes use those strategies. You know, soon after they started talking, I engaged in conversation with them and as to this guy named Mark Beatty. And then, you know, very shortly after that, Meg and Sarah, who's our CEO, and Lauren Kidwell, Linda Tran, Betsy Hoover, all started being a part of the conversation. And then in February of 2013, we said, let's do it. And so we launched. I worked on the inauguration immediately after the 2012 election while in part of those conversations. So I didn't start 2017 until after the inauguration was over.
I've been in a bunch of entrepreneur groups where people talk about running companies, and partnership is often a topic of difficulty.
Yeah.
Like working with other people on a business, not that easy often.
Yeah.
How's it been at 270 with all those people that have been part of the mix from the get-go?
It's been great. And we've had our challenges, right? Especially when you have eight folks who different backgrounds, different ideas, different opinions. The key word I would use is like, there's just an inherent trust that we all have for one another. Whenever there is a challenge, there's never a like presumption that it comes from a bad place. It's just like, okay, we have a challenge here. How did we actually get past it? And we've iterated over time. So for a while, it was all of us figuring out like, how do we move forward? And then we realized there's eight of us. We're all busy. That's probably not the best model. So now we actually have a CEO model, which Meg's our CEO, and Meg's the one who runs the day-to-day of our company. And we meet still as a group of eight to, you know, make longer, bigger strategic decisions, but we're not all eight in the weeds on the day-to-day of our company. And so you iterate over time and you figure things out and you figure out what works best. And this model is working great right now. And Meg's doing an outstanding job. And, you know, we'll see in a few years, is that still the model we want to do? Like, is this working? You know, so, but the fact that we all had trust in one another, I think is important. And then we all just also, I think, respect each other as individuals. So to know that like life changes, right? Like what you do in 2013 may be different than how you feel in 2019, and that's okay. And that doesn't, we all love each other. So that's fine.
How is it done as a business? I see you're here and sitting in a very nice office. Right. With a lot of fair number of employees, but how is it?
It's great. And I've had the, I would say, pleasure of kind of being here in a few different iterations. So actually, shortly after we started in 2013, I left because I had the opportunity to work at the White House. I actually never thought of working in government. And so when it popped up, I had to do it.
That was the Office of Engagement?
Yeah, Office of Public Engagement, yeah. Working on Valerie Jarrett's team.
Mm-hmm. That's a pretty major life experience.
Right? I would say probably the best job I've had.
What does that team do?
The Office of Public Engagement in President Obama's administration, we like to call ourselves the front door of the White House. If you wanted to interact with the administration and help us set the priorities, help us push forward on policy, you interact with the Office of Public Engagement. Particularly the things I worked on, like I helped worked on ACA implementation. So once obviously the Affordable Care Act passed and we need to enroll people, I was kind of the point in our office of working with the outreach team at the Department of Health and Human Services, the groups such as Enroll America, Planned Parenthood, SEIU, and many other groups who are out there actually enrolling folks on the ground, mayors, who many of which had high levels of uninsured folks in their city and they wanted to get them insured. And so all those kind of factions, we helped kind of put them together, say like, okay, what's the best Dallas strategy? What's the best Miami strategy? And then one of the things I got to help figure out with our amazing team is like, all right, what's the best way to use the president's time? So should he travel and try to do an enrollment event? Should he call on the radio stations and stuff like that? So that's just like one of many examples of what the office did. So if you were any constituency, you usually started with the Office of Public Engagement at the White House. It was awesome because you interact with so many different cool people who care about the issues that were on everyday Americans' minds and issues that you may not have ever heard of, but like, wow, this is super important. So it was really cool. It was really, really cool.
Coming back to 270.
Yeah.
What kind of clients did you find and what kind of clients were you looking for?
Yep. So yeah, the reason I brought up the White House thing, so I left for Hillary and then came back. And so I've seen
it's pretty nice when you're a partner and you can have that flexibility.
Exactly right.
Come in and out of an enterprise.
And it's nice to have like folks we work with who just are like, we're really cool about it.
Of course, it's good for the firm too to have, oh yeah, one of our partners is over here now.
Right. Yeah. And so I've seen this iterate over time. So I think a lot of, when we first started, well, one, we had some international clients, which were great in working with political parties in Hungary, for example, to help them think through their strategies on how to win elections. There were some cool...
It hasn't always gone well there.
It has not. And the party we worked with, unfortunately, wasn't successful. But, you know, even to like help think people like kind of take some of the work they're doing and move it to scale and move it to a different era, I think was still, you know, awesome. And one of the things I've learned over time is change doesn't happen overnight. You're not all of a sudden going to just implement some new system and then, you know, win the next election. It's just a lot of times it takes a while. So we did that. We had some campaigns that we worked on early on. So some House races like Ro Khanna when he first ran for Congress. And then we also had some nonprofit work. I will say as we've kind of kept going, one of the cool things I've seen from this company is we do a lot more now in the kind of nonprofit space. So some of the clients I work on, I work with an organization called the Black Economic Alliance, and they support candidates who care about and will focus on economic development in the Black community. And that's just been like a really cool experience to like help. They just started a couple years ago and it really helped them think through their strategy. I worked with an organization last year called FAM, Families Against Mandatory Minimums. And they are an organization that have a connection to families who've been affected by our system of incarceration, particularly on the mandatory minimum side here in America. We sat down with them and they said, you know, we have all these families and we do a lot of lobbying and things like that, but we want to organize these families and work with them to have them have a seat at the table and have a voice as well too. So we helped them create an organizing program. They hired their first organizing director. They have organizers on the ground in Pennsylvania and are actually working to organize these folks and have them be the ones who are contacting the legislatures and pushing forward on policy change. So we've gotten more into spaces like that as we've kept going on and have taken from, you know, trying to get to 270 electoral votes, hence our name, to...
Oh, I thought you were offering 270 different strategies to every client. I was like, that's got to be confusing.
That would be a very long proposal. No, it's all about the electoral votes. But those strategies work in other cases too. And I think we've been able to show that over time.
And when you look at statistics about incarceration in the United States, yeah, and you compare it to other countries, it's appalling.
That's a light word for it. It's unconscionable and it's...
I got a 16-year-old writing a paper on this, yeah, in high school now and looking at the numbers and it's like, we're at the bottom. And there's no excuse for it.
No. Yeah. And so
it must be very satisfying to at least be engaged in trying to
100%.
Change.
100%. That's exactly right. And I think, you know, one of the things I've personally have gotten in the past few years, and now I'm like you, I'm a dad as well too, and that's more recent. And I've loved doing the campaign side of things, but now there's a lot of new group of folks who have come up and are doing great work on running these campaigns. And so I look at where can I be the best value add? And to me, it's to be able to work with organizations like FAM moving forward to say, how are we a part of that change, right? And one of the things I love is like working with these organizations who are doing like this tangible on the ground stuff right now to try to change some of our policy systems.
So what is an ideal client for you? Is FAM an ideal client?
FAM's a perfect ideal client. Yeah. It's like, we know we want to do this. We know we want to reach out to people. We know we want to organize people. We don't know how. Like, how do we even begin that process, right? And so we took a couple months and wrote a plan, and then we implemented it.
So say I have an organization that wants to make some kind of change of that, or I want to start one or whatever. Yep. What are the words of wisdom that they would hear from you kind of briefly?
Yeah. In 2017, I was a fellow at the Georgetown Institute of Politics and led a discussion group on organizing and social justice. And the point I made in that discussion group, I worked with students to create 8 different groups, was that all big social change in the country happened from the ground up. I don't think people were just elected or like, we're going to do this big change. And it all started from the grassroots level of people saying like, we need better healthcare or we need a fair and just civil rights system. And then policymakers ultimately were pushed to that place where they needed to make change. And I say that because, now to go back to your question, is if we were to sit down with the organization, I think it's all about people and organizing people and giving them the tools they need to make those change. And that's where I think we at 270 come in, is to be able to help them understand strategies for engaging people, giving people those tools, and then giving them systems for which they can be successful. And I think that's one of the things we have done with groups like FAM and can continue to do for many other organizations throughout this country.
When you think about the work that 270 has done, is there a particular client where you feel like, hey, we really had impact here?
Speaking personally, because many of us are doing different clients.
A lot going on in parallel.
A lot going on in parallel, exactly. Yeah. FAM's definitely one for me. Again, Black Economic Alliance, which I'm working with now, I feel like we're helping them make impact because they're a new organization that has amazing people that want to do good work. And I think we're helping them think through some really good strategies. One of our big clients is UFCW, which Jeremy works with, and helping them think through strategies of member engagement and member outreach.
Food and commercial workers.
United Food and Commercial Workers. And I know that that has been something that has been really successful to them and to us, to just get a chance to work on something that, like that.
It seems like there's been a number of organizations, I'm sure I'm not aware of all of them, that have kind of been related to 270 or spun out of 270. Yeah. Like I talked to the head of iVote.
Yeah.
What other things like that are there?
So related to 270, so iVote's one, and there was not like a real group that was working on the Secretary of State level in terms of campaign. And that, obviously they have a lot of influence on the election systems in this country. So iVote spun out of that. Betsy Hoover, one of our partners a couple years ago, started Higher Ground Labs.
Yeah, I talked to her about that.
That's a organization that invests in technologies, digital technologies that can be used at the campaign level. You know, I think one of the things we had saw was that every presidential campaign, there'd be a tech team, there'd be creating new products for that specific campaign. But there's all these now smart tech folks in the world. And so why not use, it doesn't have to just be in the middle of a campaign cycle where we're figuring this out. So she's done a really good job of working with organizations to create new technologies that can be used by these campaigns to figuring out during the campaign cycle. And then the other one I would say is Do Big Things is an organization, and they kind of spun out 270. It's affiliated with us. It's basically like a digital, all things digital. So if you want digital ads, if you need to create a website, if you need overall digital strategy on how to reach folks online, that's an organization now that it's separate, but we work with the 270 that is affiliated with us as well.
What was your lens on the Trump primary and general election wins? How did you see that from your vantage point?
In 2016?
Yeah.
I, you know,
that's the year he won, yeah.
Yeah.
Seems like a long time ago.
Yeah, I know, right? Exactly, yeah.
We've been through a lot as a country.
Right. Broadly speaking, I will say,
I mean, you went to work for Hillary in 2016, is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And what was that role?
I oversaw the state and political operations.
Which means what?
So it was my team who would put together strategies to win certain states, along obviously with Robbie, who was the campaign manager. And then the political operations were, you know, working with current elected officials at all levels to engage with the campaign.
So that's quite a vantage point to be thinking about
him
and how he did.
Yeah. I remember being shocked for a second in the primary, like that he was, you know, started to win those states, and then not being shocked because I just remembered what the 2010 was like and how the Tea Party got formed. I think he speaks to those folks, right? And he heard them. And he spoke to them. Mm-hmm. And I think he was able to do that in the primary. I think in the general election, I think I'll say a couple of things about the general election. One, in the country, Hillary got more votes. Obviously, Trump got more electoral votes. And I say it because I do think that there are a lot of people who still support not just her, but again, like the direction of the way the country should go. But he also, I think, tapped into something that obviously just wasn't in the primary and carried over into the general election. And it's something that we should all understand and not, you know, progressives and Democrats should not be just saying like, oh, it was a fluke in 2016. I actually think of anything in 2018, and yes, I know we won the House back, but like a lot of Trump voters voted in states like Florida and other states. They still showed
up. They had high turnout.
Exactly.
In some of those states.
Exactly.
And we lost some big races statewide.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, obviously, I found the result extremely disappointing and I would say shocking at the time. But then when I like kind of take a step back now and I go back again to the issue of race that I mentioned, obviously the gender dynamics that what happened in 2016 and the lens on that from this country, there's a lot of people who came to us as a firm after Trump's election. It's like, all right, I want to do social media and I kind of want to do it. Trump obviously is big on social media, et cetera. You know, it wasn't like he just got on Twitter and became a Twitter phenomenon. He had a brand that was 30, 40 years built. And I would say the last 5 to 10 built off denigrating President Obama, which again speaks to a certain segment of our country, sadly, when you speak like that. So it shows that like even with President Obama's election, how far we've gone, Trump's election shows how far we have to go. And I think there's some strong cultural questions as a society we just need to ask ourselves. And this is just forget who's president right now, but we need to ask ourselves about like how we've gotten to this point, who we are as a people, and how do we move past some of those questions.
There are people who are really worried that there's a potential slide to authoritarianism, as we've seen in other countries where you've done work, like Hungary or elsewhere in the world. Do you worry about that, or do you think our institutions hold and we are really in regular election and government world?
Maybe I'm naive. I think it's more the latter for me. And a good example of that is like, you do have the executive, legislative, and judicial branches, and you have the separation of powers. And I think, you know, even with them trying to repeal healthcare, they couldn't figure that out. And so I don't worry about the authoritarianism part. I do worry about like our elections part. Obviously, there's the Russia piece that happened, but even, you know, like you look at Stacey Abrams running for governor of Georgia.
Vote suppression problems.
Exactly, yeah. Right? And so that is a huge threat to our democracy and our society that, you know, I think we kind of talk about in terms of like, oh, Russia, whatever, but I don't think really fully grasps like the depth of that problem with the future of democracy in the United States.
I think of anybody who starts a firm like 270 in this space as kind of a political entrepreneur. What do you think you've learned about starting a company in the political space from doing that?
I think we've learned how to start a company, when we first started, it's just like,
it seems like a magical thing.
Yeah. Right. And we like, I remember we like signed the paperwork and all that stuff and then got started. And then we were like, all right, now what? Right. And so
what are we selling?
And exactly.
Who are we talking to?
And like, how are we getting clients?
How much do we charge?
Exactly. All that stuff. And so and I'm sure anybody who starts a company, you probably feel this way. What you learn over time, like if we could go back now and do it over again, we would have so many different decisions that we made early on. But then part of the fun of it is trying to figure it out and understand what it means to run a business. Again, if you had asked me in college, would I have an opportunity to work in the White House, work on campaigns, run a business? Like, no, I'd be like, no, I'm going to go work at Microsoft or Intel. You know, that was like my thought at the time. But, I feel blessed to have taken the path I did. So that's part of what being an entrepreneur is.
What is mostly occupying you right now? Besides being a dad, you mentioned before we started that you have little twins.
I have 19-month-old twins. They are, them and my wife are my everything and occupy my time in the best way. Put it this way, this is where I want my time occupied. So that's mostly where I spend my time. And then outside of that, you know, I'm still at 270 working with the Black Economic Alliance and have a couple other projects that I'm cooking up as well. And then I am actually in grad school part-time. So after...
What are you studying?
Public policy. So part
at which school? At Georgetown.
Yeah.
And I finished... I took one class in that program once.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Well, I finished up in May. Yeah. And I think everyone went through their 2016 reflections, and I actually tried to do some reflective work post every campaign because when you win, I don't believe you're as good as people say, and when you lose, I don't think you're as bad as people say. I think you always learn no matter what. And I wanted to learn more about the actual policy piece because I've done the outreach, I've done the organizing, but I'm like, okay, now what? I always said like I want to get people elected, and then they will do the policy, and now I want to say, oh, what does this policy look like? How, you know, what does it mean? I've learned so much in this past 2 years in Georgetown.
So you have a lot of experience in presidential campaigns now. Is anyone trying to pull you back in? Is that possible?
It's not possible. I like to say I'm retired from doing that. And one, because again, where I'm kind of focusing my time now, and as you know, it takes a lot of time and energy to go work on a presidential campaign, and I've done four, so I'm good.
What do you think of the candidates we have in the field right now?
I think we have a great selection of candidates. I think that
Do you have a horse?
Nope. I have a bunch of friends who are working on many of the campaigns, and I say, if I can be helpful, if you want to call for perspective on X, Y, and Z, you need some outside the box thinking, please call me. Outside of that, I'm hoping, and already I think we've seen a good primary where it's just like focusing on the issues, focusing on vision. I think we need someone who can really speak to a good vision of where the country should go. Outside of that, I'll be happy to knock on doors for whoever comes out the winner next year.
If you could dictate the ideal qualities of a candidate to put up, you mentioned expressing a vision. That's pretty obvious, but what do you think this particular time going up against Trump, trying to turn the direction back to things that you and I care about and many other people, what do you think are the characteristics that would best serve us?
I think there's a difference between the characteristics of what makes a good president and a characterism of what it makes to run for president. And ideally, you want both. I think President Obama was able to do both. I think he was adept at the policy and the components of that, while also being a terrific campaigner. And so just from the campaign side, again, I think you want someone who has a good vision of the country. I think you want that person to, in the words of Michelle Obama, when they go low, you go high. Because I don't think we need a campaign on everything that's terrible. I think we need a campaign on here's where we need to go.
He's not a great person to wrestle in the mud with. Right.
And I think if we're wrestling in the mud, we're going to lose. That's my personal opinion. So, and that doesn't mean you just let him say what he wants about you, but I think that you have to kind of rise above it. And I think that's going to be extremely important. So that's the first piece I will say. And then look, I think as much as this is kind of cliche, I do believe in just the ability to work with people and working across the aisle. I actually think there's so much more we agree on than we disagree on. I think what gets reported all the time is where we kind of are strong differences, but there's a lot of agree. I worked on one of my favorite clients. I should have mentioned this earlier at 270. I got a chance to work last year on the ballot initiative in Florida to restore voting rights to previous incarcerated felons.
Still having some implementation problems.
But I will say, working on that, there was a lot of conservative support.
It was actually astonishing to me how that became not a partisan.
It didn't, right? And actually, that's a really important point, is that if you look at ballot issues like that, in Missouri minimum wage passed, in Idaho Medicaid expansion passed, from a issue perspective, a lot of things that me, you, and other folks care about is passing. It's when you get into a campaign of people and candidates, and then you get into your corners, then it becomes just very, to your words, partisan. And so I kind of want a candidate who doesn't make it about that and makes it more about what makes these ballot initiatives successful, and really talk to the people about where we can go.
Well, it does seem like one of the battles is sort of in between pragmatism and progressive purity or something like that.
Yeah.
Where are you in that?
I don't personally come from a place of this issue, take whatever issue, has to be done this way in order for us to be successful. And I think if we campaign that way, and frankly, if we legislate that way, that's not how we should work. I think it's important to start from a place of where you believe in, but then be able to talk to people and figure out how to make it better or where you compromise.
The problem is it's a very big country with a huge diversity of opinion.
Yeah. I agree, which is why I'm not working on 2020 campaigns.
Well, is there a question I should have asked that I failed to?
No, we got my wife and kids and that was it. This has been fun. I really appreciate you having me on.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was Marlon Marshall at 270 Strategies. He's at 270strategies.com. Glad to have Marlon out there helping progressive organizations. This is Nathaniel G. Perlman with the Great Battlefield Podcast. You can find us at resistancedashboard.com or by searching for Great Battlefield in places where podcasts are found.